Welcome to Tip TV Finance, and it's that time of the week when we are with Tim Price, Director of Price Value Partners. You're not only a director at Price Value Partners, but also you are an author of note.
I am now. I've rapidly become one.
The book is called Investing Through the Looking Glass, and I imagine that you might have wished that you released it like maybe a week later or something like that.
No, not really.
Well, there's so much happening in 2016 that literally a book is, you know, it becomes...
You can't quite capture everything.
Yeah, you need to have an online version which just keeps updating itself.
I suppose I was gratified to get it published just before the bond market started to collapse, because that, I think, is probably the big financial theme of the year. And one of the things, I think the last time I was on, we talked about narrative and this book, Sapiens, by Yuval Harari. Everything's dominated by narrative, so we're suckers for stories. And the great thing about 2016 is that the two massive stories have everyone's got completely wrong. So Brexit was the first shoe to drop, or clown shoe to drop, and then Donald Trump's election victory was the second.
But something I spent, obviously, you know, hours thinking about this. Both Brexit and Trump, from my point of view, the media knew, or the establishment knew, they were going to lose, or they feared they were going to lose, or there was a very high chance they were going to lose. So they threw everything at it, everything.
Yeah.
So it was a thought crime. It was a thought crime, and it was morally repugnant to believe both in Brexit and in Trump. So you couldn't, you know, you had the shy Trumpsters and the shy Brexiteers. Mm-hmm. So everything was done, you know, it's just not cricket to go for those things. And they still lost. And then now they're complaining, even though everything was thrown at them. I mean,
it's one
of those things that you say, well, given how that everything was done, everything, when you fail and you've done everything, you've done, you know, you studied all your homework, you did everything else, and then you fail, then you've got to say it's fair and square, we lost. But they don't do that.
Well, you could argue there's an element of sort of millennial whinging going on. The best tweet, I mean, a confession, I've become somewhat addicted to Twitter as a guilty pleasure over the course of the year. But in this environment, Twitter, I think future historians will say that Twitter won the election for Trump. And that's one of the narratives I do like, and I think that has merit, this argument that mainstream media now is effectively sort of facing an extinction-level event.
Is that because journalists are working for money-losing newspapers
Probably.
And they toe the line of their elitist proprietors?
I think so. I mean,
is it more rocket science than that?
One thing I mentioned, one of many things that I sort of touch on in the book, is I find it a bit of a scandal that in the aftermath of the greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression, the most trenchant commentary about the financial system and the flaws in it hasn't come from the Wall Street Journal, hasn't come from the Financial Times. It's come from the pages of Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair. And if that doesn't sum up the surreality of the current environment, I don't know what does.
Right, and one of the concepts of the year, fake news. I mean, we've had fake news all the time. There's fake news regarding Brexit or what would happen.
Well, there was groupthink. There was huge, possibly the biggest ever example of groupthink on a monumental, universal scale. What can you say except, you know, let the church bells ring?
Well, the other thing was, I mean, I did actually, because I'm not a big reader myself, so I sort of outsourced.
You're quite tall on you.
I outsourced some of the reading of the book, of your book, to my 10-year-old daughter. So
her considered opinion was,
we opened the book. She opened the book at the part where just before the Act of Union between England and Scotland.
It's the story of RBS
and the story of RBS and how it was exactly the same in 1707 or 6. The lead up was the same as 2007.
Yeah, a crash that destroyed half the wealth of the country.
So things just do not change, even with the social. I mean, that was, I think, for me, the one of the biggest takeaways from the book. You think that with social media things have really made it. It's all different, and it's all new age, and you know, smartphones and everything else. But the process works, even with, you know, by candlelight.
Sure.
It is amazing,
sure,
isn't it?
I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. I wonder whether it's probably fair. I mean, I read English at university, and one of the periods. I mean, the Oxford syllabus is, at least it was in the 80s when I was studying, is extraordinarily broad. So you start basically, or you did then, in the Anglo-Saxon period, so around sort of 1000 AD and, you know, Beowulf and all that stuff. And to quote Woody Allen, don't do anything where they make you read Beowulf. But apparently the Anglo-Saxon's no longer compulsory, so it's much safer to go there now.
It's not politically correct anymore, is it?
But I think, I think the You can make a valid comparison between effectively social media today, particularly Twitter, which is something I use quite actively, and the glory age, the golden age of pamphleteering and the great satirists, when people, you know, you had printing. Printing had sort of comparatively recently come, you know, to the fore as a technology, and people just, and there was just an explosion of creativity and criticism. So you had a really lively public debate about this stuff, and Twitter's sort of taken that to the next level because it's happening in cyberspace at, you know, at Mach 10, and, you know, mainstream media is struggling to catch up. The other thing I think that's relevant about Twitter, the Twitter sphere in relation to, you know, the events, political events of 2016, is that it's acted, that the likes of Twitter have acted as an echo chamber. In other words, the thing about the digital world versus the real world is it is possible to surround yourself with an interest group completely aligned with your own view. So, for example, if you were Remain...
So you reinforce
your own prejudices and biases and whatever, for better or for worse. So I think one reason why the pollsters got it so terribly badly wrong was the people, and also the people who, in those parties who happened to be on the wrong side in pure number terms, they were surrounded by a community of like-minded people who thought, there's no way that side can possibly win. It became very polarised. And if you surround yourself with that community, you know, there's no room for an alternative view to pierce your shell. And I think that's one reason why, firstly, the debates, were so, you know, polarised and so vicious. And it's also the reason why we got the result we did, because there was clearly an underclass of people or people who felt they were, you know, removed from the mainstream. And this was a gigantic howl of protest. And it's even funnier to hear the howl of protest from the people who thought they were going to win it, and are now, you know, basically either taking the government to court to try and overturn it or taking to the streets. And I clearly can't approve of the violence, but it's a good thing, I think, for politics in general that people have such powerful views. I think that's great for debate.
Tim Price, author of Investing Through the Looking Glass, freely available. Well, it's not freely available.
No, you have to pay for it.
You have to pay for it. Free lunch. Widely available in all good bookshops and on Amazon. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.